What will happen to your collection when you leave this life? Do you have a plan that will make sure it doesn't end up in a skip? And does your collection contain irreplaceable parts of the film and TV history? Welcome to another episode of the Humming Projector Podcast, where we today will talk about Film is Fabulous, an organization run by film collectors, cinema lovers, and vintage television enthusiasts. And with me today to talk about this, I have three guests. And first off, we have Sue Molden, an independent media archive management consultant, formerly head of BBC Broadcast Archives. She currently chairs the board of trustees at MACE, the media archive for Central England, and has worked for several other organizations. Welcome to the podcast, Sue.
Thank you. Thanks. It's a great pleasure to be here with you all.
And great to have you here.
Thank you.
Justin Smith is a professor of cinema and television history and a director of the Research and Innovation Institute in Arts, Design and Performance at the De Montfort University. Welcome to the podcast, Justin.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, we briefly met at Blackpool, but I'm really glad to see you here again now today. And finally, John Franklin, who I also met in Blackpool. He is a film collector with a sizable private collection of 16mm films. The question is how much time he has for his collection, though, as he now very much is involved in the work of Film is Fabulous. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting us.
I know too well from my Super 8 database and podcast work how much time can be spent on those projects and how much less time that is available for film collecting, but that is just another way of showing the love of films, I guess. So, first off, what is Film is Fabulous? We have many international listeners here in the podcast, not just listeners from the UK. So perhaps you could explain a little bit what Film is Fabulous actually is.
Well, I'll keep this very short. And indeed, you've mentioned some of this already in your introduction. Film is Fabulous is an organization run by film collectors, cinema lovers, and vintage television enthusiasts that is or was basically formed with a view to support private film collectors in the United Kingdom and to make sure that all of those wonderful film treasures that are held privately are not lost when collectors unfortunately pass.
So this is not a business venture that many others that collect films from deceased collectors. You're not set up as a business venture. So what is your motivation to collect these films? You have already said a little bit about it, but could you say a little bit how Film is Fabulous was established? What motivated you to get it up and running?
Okay, well, again, I'll try and keep this as concise as I can because, of course, as Sue and Justin both know, I can talk. However, I am a film collector and I've been collecting film for almost 40 years. And a lot of people within the film collecting community are, well, close friends. During COVID, we sadly lost a lot of the older collectors. And I was contacted by their families. Very often you get a call at the weekend, hello, John, it's such and such. Dad's passed away. What should we do with his films? And of course, it was a very traumatic time for families. It was a difficult time for most of people generally. And there were no provisions that we could easily lean on to find solutions as to what to do with people's film collections. So we sadly lost a lot of films because people had to move on in the world. That meant giving a priority to selling the property, the estate, and very often the films were thrown into a skip because there wasn't the level of support there that there is now. And there is some support there because I spoke to a number of my film collecting colleagues. I reached out to Justin and his colleagues at De Montfort University and other people from the film and television industry like Sue, who have expert knowledge in archiving. And we basically came up with the idea of trying fundamentally to encourage film collectors to take some time and make some plans for the future of their films. Because, and this was one of the things that we learnt in the aftermath of COVID, most of the elderly collectors had no wills. They had no lists of their films, and they had made no provision or given absolutely no instructions to what they wanted to happen once they passed. And so really, what we tried to do initially with Film is Fabulous was to try and encourage elderly collectors to make those plans, to formalize them by adding a codicil into their will with a list of their films, so that when they did sadly pass, there was something for their families or their estates to lean on to know what their hopes and plans were for the future of their films. And from that point, what we decided to do was to hold our first event, which we did in October 2023 in Leicester. And we basically went out to as many film collectors as we could to try and encourage them to do exactly that. That was really the genesis of Film is Fabulous.
And now that you have been running this organization for a few years, I understand that you are planning a change of structure of the organization, and that you have made an application to make Film is Fabulous a charitable trust. Can you say a little bit about the motivation for that and what this change will mean for your work?
Well, up until now, Film is Fabulous has had a very productive relationship with De Montfort University, insofar as in summer of 2022, John approached me, and we decided that this initiative was something that was very much chimed with the interests of cinema and television historians at De Montfort University. We already hold here a number of paper archives, largely. We don't keep a great deal of film, but we have a number of important paper archive collections, including the script archive of Hammer Films, the Sir Norman Wisdom Archive, the Tony Hancock Appreciation Society Archive, the papers of Tony and Michael Klinger, important independent British producers from the 1960s, really up until the 2000s. I could go on and on. We have some very notable collections, and myself and my colleagues are all committed to archival film and television history. That's what we do. I'll come on to answer your question directly, which is about the charitable status. What we've managed to do over the past 18 months in partnership with De Montfort University and Film is Fabulous is to draw on some very small pots of internal funding, which have helped us to develop a prototype, if you like, of a triage service for taking in, assessing, cataloguing, and disposing of, in a variety of constructive ways, film collections held in private hands. And we've managed to do that with the benefit of our special collections department at De Montfort University, which has suitable temperature-controlled facilities for film storage, and which has enabled us thus far to work on a number of film collections. But moving forward, the idea came about that, you know, we really wanted to gain some autonomy for Film is Fabulous. And we've actually been overwhelmed by the fantastic response from members of the public, from fellow film collectors, from vintage television enthusiasts, as John mentioned. And that's evidenced by, for example, one particular set of items, which were a series that was produced by the American Danziger brothers in the 1950s in Britain, which was a detective series called Sabre of London. Mark Sabre was a Scotland Yard detective. It was a very popular long-running series on British television in the late 1950s. And we managed to get funding through a GoFundMe campaign. We raised £3,000 in just a single week from very kind public donations, which enabled us to restore some items from that collection to piece together the visual track and the sound track of a number of items and to get them restored to reconstitute full episodes of that series. That's just a small example, but it told us that people out there are very keen on vintage film and television and very keen to support the work we're doing. So from that, we thought the next logical step is to establish ourselves as a charity with very clear educational motives about what our aims and objectives are in order to take this initiative forward beyond its pilot stage to a new, more autonomous and more sustainable future.
If I could add, Ivan, so far we have not had we've been so appreciative of the contributions, but archiving and film archiving and tape archiving in particular is a pretty expensive business. And we've been very much dependent so far on volunteers doing as much as they can. And here I have to make a note of Justin and John in particular John, in the amount of work he's put in, totally unpaid for, and many other helpers, like maybe Paul Venesis and so on, and other people who've helped on the website and everything. It's all volunteers, and that's not necessarily sustainable. And sustainability is what's absolutely essential to Film is Fabulous, because we know there's so much work that needs to be done, that there are so many collections in private hands that are likely to, you know, to fall off a cliff in the next few years if there isn't somebody there to help them. So sorry to interrupt, Justin, there, but I thought had to call out for the volunteers, and that's why we need charitable fund status to help give credibility to our activities and therefore apply for greater funding sums to maintain this sustainability that we want.
Mm. But this structure is kind of new for both academia and for the film archives, haven't traditionally been cooperating with private persons. So what does this bring to the research you do at the university, Justin, that you couldn't otherwise have done, except for, of course, we all don't want to lose the film copies as a collector. For sure, that's a motivation by itself. But I guess you have other things that you try to get from this, finding these films. Could you say a little bit about that?
Yes, it's very important to the university as researchers to cooperate in this initiative and help support it from a number of perspectives. There is an educational perspective. So the recovery of the techniques and the skills in film archiving, in film handling, from experienced experts and private collectors who have a whole repertoire of knowledge and skills that they've, some of them, derived from their own professional careers in the film and television industry, others as pure enthusiasts for film and television. That set of skills, also in the digital age, is in danger of dying out, in danger of disappearing. A whole branch of knowledge about film as a physical medium will in a few years' time be lost as we have taken a technological shift from physical analog formats to ephemeral digital ones. And as with any technological revolution, which is what we've lived through our generation, things get lost. Not only content, not only the film items and the television items that we referred to, but the skills in how to handle them and how to process them and how to catalogue them. Now, one small way in which we can contribute as a project through our educational institution is to help keep alive that knowledge and those skills and to disseminate it to involve our students postgraduate level initially in as helpers and willing volunteers to learn about film handling. So there's a very important educational aspect to begin with. Then there's the research partnerships angle. For very many years, we as film historians at De Montfort University have had close relationships with the British Film Institute's archives, with the BBC and their archives, and with those of other broadcasters as well. And this project is another way in which we can facilitate and develop those relationships with important institutional bodies within our culture. And finally, what it creates potentially in terms of generating new knowledge is the sense that besides the films themselves, which we're keen to preserve, there are the lives and the cultural pursuits and enthusiasms of those film collectors themselves. As I said, many of whom may have had careers within the film and television industry. And we're very keen that a wider project, which could be a subject for Arts and Humanities Research Council funding, could help us to enlarge the dedicated focus of Film is Fabulous on rescuing the film collections themselves, to actually document the whole culture of film collecting as a pursuit, and to interview through an extended oral history program many of the collectors who survive while they're still with us, to capture their stories, their memories, their contributions to film and television culture. And we see that as being a potential fruitful adjunct to the principal goal of Film is Fabulous, to safeguard the film collections themselves. And that work also tallies with another very important initiative that I know that Sue has been absolutely instrumental in and is part and parcel of, which is the British Entertainment History Project. And perhaps Sue might want to say a little bit about how, you know, potentially that initiative might be of also tally with some of the things that I've been saying.
Yes, yeah, thanks so much, Justin. Yes, the British Entertainment History Project is a collection of interviews with people who've worked in film, television, radio and theatre. The collection began in 1987, but although it began in 87, the ages of the people that were interviewed give us almost a century's span of knowledge about what it was like to be a cameraman on in a balloon going over the First World War trenches and things like that. So the collection is fantastic from that point of view, but it always needs refreshing with other aspects of film and television work. And collectors really are very important people to us that I suspect the industries themselves have rather overlooked and not realised that they're there, and what an amazing job they've been doing, kind of under the and undercover almost without us knowing. And I very much want us to be able to praise and laud that activity, and you know, welcome these guys who've just done such fantastic work, and that amazing keeping the products that people made goes very nicely with the interviews with people who worked editing or lighting or camera directing films and telly material. So the British Entertainment History Project is a great collection. Over, it's nearly about 150 interviews now, all of which need to be digitized and accessible and transcribed so you can find out what people are talking about. Because like so many things with the collectors, these days, you know, we don't know what Joe Bloggs' cameraman did or worked on. And if we've got a 4-hour interview with him, How on earth are you going to find out what he's talking about? We really need these interviews to be transcribed to make them much more accessible for people in the future. And we will need to do that same work with interviews we do with collectors who are an integral part of the scene completely.
This is something I really love to hear, because I am really interested in this part, the cultural importance of film collecting. As you might know, I'm working with the Super 8 database, trying to catalog all the Super 8 films ever released. That's an impossible task, but we try. And I've been in contact with the university in Mainz in Germany, Nicole Breidas especially, that has been doing research on Super 8 collecting. So because this was cultural important.
Well, I think it's important to say that when we really started talking about Film is Fabulous, we were talking in terms of film collectors. But what surprised me over the last 12 months is just how many industry professionals, and I'm talking about ex-cameramen, ex-sound engineers, people who were projectionists, people who were editors. I mean, even people that were presenters and authors, you know, senior roles in the whole production, have come forward, or in particular, their families have come forward now and said, oh, we've got all of such and such, my father or my mother's collection. It's been sitting in the garage or the pig shed for 20 years. We're looking to do something with it. Can you help? So not only are we talking about out-and-out collectors who've had no employment or no previous engagement in the television or film industry, we're now talking about serious numbers of people that have had major roles in those industries coming forward and also talking to us. And I think that's one of the most pleasing aspects, because we've put ourselves into that middle ground where we're not looking to cherry pick from people's collections by just trying to pick the best bits and leave them with the rest to resolve. We're trying to help to save the whole collection. And because we've got the background that we have, my connections through the film collecting community, Justin through academia, Sue, of course, with vast experience and huge network of contacts in the archival world, people are willing to trust us. And trust is such an important component in this.
Oh, yeah.
Because once you have people's trust, they're willing to place, well, their collection and all of the history of what's happened with the films over into your hands. And that's probably, for me, the most rewarding aspect.
I suspect that's also one of the most needed aspects as well, because I think many of the families of collectors are uncertain about how dad or whoever it is acquired the things that they've got. Are they legal? Have they breached copyright? If they try to sell them, will the police be around? You know, people who don't understand and don't know or aren't part of the film and television archive world are really quite scared that they might be in trouble if they do something about it. So it's so important that we can reach out and be a trusted expert, really, or a group of experts to help people in that situation, because it's very worrying for families sometimes.
Yes, and I must say that I have really loved how you try to be present in the community to build this trust, because that's the base of everything you can build up on later. And as you have said, people might have had illegal copies of films back in the day. Many remember the days when you had a 60mm copy and was afraid to perhaps be taken with this copy. And now that this has kind of turned around, where the archives are really interested in cooperation to save the film history. So that's quite a big turn during the last 30, 40 years. And so many older collectors might see this as a big change. And I can see how important that must be for you to build on this trust, because without these collectors, you couldn't do this work.
That's so true. One of the last things I did when I was still at the BBC, partly in conjunction with Dick Fiddy at the BFI, and as John said, or maybe it's Justin also said, we collaborate with the BFI a lot. I organised an official treasure hunt from the BBC to make it known that we were not happy with having not kept certain, you know, very significant programs for a whole host of reasons. Sometimes, you know, they weren't recorded, they went out live. So the rights made it all very difficult for the official broadcaster to keep these programs if they didn't have the rights, totally overlooking the pleasure and the historical and social significance of these programs. So that, again, the collectors have come in and have been so helpful in doing that. It's great. But I have to say, that treasure hunt I organized, the biggest find in that was a couple of Dad's Armies that came back, which were fantastic. But, you know, the finds we're getting through Film is Fabulous are topping that. I mean, it's wonderful what's coming forward. It's so exciting. It's great.
And that doesn't just benefit the archives. I'm sure you will, as often as possible, show this to the public. So this is important for the entire nation, I would say. I'm a Norwegian, though, not living in the UK, but I still find this interesting, being a Norwegian, and I can just imagine the British residents, how important it would be to them to look again at something that was considered lost.
Yeah, that's true. And the outlets for that are much more possible now. In the past, when, you know, the broadcasters only had one or two channels and they were driven to be making new content, then they weren't interested in showing the older stuff. But now there are so many channels. There are people like Talking Pictures and Rewind who, you know, they know their audience. They know there are people out there who want to see this stuff. So we're looking to collaborate much more with possible outlets. And also we can show, you know, in the forthcoming event in Leicester, we'll definitely be showing some of the finds. We've done that in the past. So we're taking every opportunity we can to let people see after 30, 40, 50 years, some of these programs and films.
What Sue touched on just then is absolutely crucial to the sort of third part of our mission. If we've outlined, you know, our first duty to the collectors and their families in building trust and rescuing and preserving their collections, the second being the educational remit and the research aspect that we spoke about earlier. But absolutely, the third pillar of what we're about is making as much of the relevant material that we find accessible to the public and to share the selected finds, when they be rare or unusual things, with the public. Because often they have been the products originally of public service broadcasters. But equally, you know, we have been able to reach out to license holders and to negotiate very favourable terms for ways in which we can get certain items into the public domain. Sue mentioned two very important dedicated channels in the UK, Talking Pictures Television and Rewind TV, but also we have, in the 18 months that Film is Fabulous has been going, we have put on a number of public screening events. We kicked off with that very first event that John mentioned at the Phoenix Cinema and Arts Centre in Leicester back in October 2023. Next month, on the 11th of May, we're returning to the Phoenix Cinema for a wonderful Sunday afternoon matinee program of selected items of vintage television that Film is Fabulous has discovered, unearthed, returned to the copyright holders or the broadcasters, had scanned, in some cases had remedial work done upon, and are now in a position under special terms granted by copyright holders to allow us to show a selection of those items publicly. And that is really the icing on the cake. It means a tremendous amount to us. And this event is going to be open to the general public, obviously will attract film collectors and vintage television enthusiasts across the board, but is also equally an opportunity where we can say thank you to those who've been especially kind and generous to us, like those I mentioned earlier, who contributed to the GoFundMe campaign to raise money for a television restoration. And we can look forward to welcoming them as special guests at the Phoenix, along with anybody else who's interested, on Sunday the 11th of May. And further details about how to get hold of tickets for that event are available on the Film is Fabulous website, filmisfabulous.org.uk, and also through the Phoenix Cinema box office, Leicester, where tickets can be booked. So that event for us, 18 months on, is a very, very important and significant milestone on our journey from a fledgling outfit to really having established a modus operandi, a way of safeguarding, rescuing and processing film collections, to the ability to share some of our finds with the public, which means more than anything to us. Yeah. Perhaps we'll go on shortly to give you a little sneak preview of some of the items that we're planning to show.
Oh, I look forward to that. I would just add that I will link to your website and to the Phoenix website where you could buy tickets in the show notes. So you can easily find that when you have completed listening to this episode. This film festival really shows that this is not just talking. This is actual action, where we have actually completed restoring a film and now showing it to the public. So this kind of fulfills the circle for your work. And I'm sure that will be interesting for everybody that has been following your work. And now I'm curious, what films are you planning to show on the festival?
Well, I shall kick off it's a three-part program for the afternoon, and I'll kick off by previewing a couple of items in the first session. Each session of screen material is going to be accompanied with some discussion and so on to consider and reflect on the significance of the items. We're kicking off with an episode of a series that I mentioned earlier, Sabre of London, this was the detective Mark Sabre of Scotland Yard, and this was a series produced, as I mentioned earlier, by the American Danziger brothers. This particular episode, entitled Four Against Three, was first broadcast on the 11th of November 1959. And so that promises to be a dynamic detective thriller item from that early period. We're following that up with a single drama. Now, anybody who knows anything about television history will know that the great tradition in British television, both from the BBC and the ITV, from the 1950s through the 1960s and into the 70s, was the single drama, the single story format, usually of an hour, which commissioned and brought to public attention some of our most celebrated writers and actors and television technicians in a number of landmark series. The BBC had Play for Today and The Wednesday Play, and the ITV had a complimentary series called ITV Playhouse. And it's an item from that series, ITV Playhouse, called Each Wind That Blows, that we're going to be showing also in the afternoon programme. It was first broadcast on the 15th of April 1960. It was an adaptation of a story by Pamela Llewellyn and was adapted for television by Wilfred Eades and Robert Hall. An intriguing story, a crime-related drama. Nicholas Challon is acquitted of a charge of murdering a young girl. How will his wife react when he returns home after 3 months in prison? That is the trailer from TV Times of that original item that was first shown in April 1960. An intriguing one-off drama that we're looking forward to showing in the first part of the afternoon programme at the Phoenix on the 11th of May. But I'm going to hand over to John, who can tell you more about some of the other items that we're screening that afternoon.
Well, I don't want to say too much.
Sure.
Because there are some things that we are going to announce just prior to the event, and a couple of very special things we're going to announce on the day. Mm. I think people will be very excited. What I will mention is that in one collection, we found more than 50 episodes of a soap opera that started in 1957 and ran for 10 years called Emergency Ward 10. Most of the 50 that we found, most, are missing from the ITV archive.
Oh, wow.
And we've selected one of those, an episode called The Long Small Hours that was broadcast in 1966, September 1966, has a fantastic cast and is compelling viewing. And the reason we've selected it is it's a slightly longer extended version and it really allows you to get into some of the characterization. Fascinating, fascinating viewing. And I think everyone that comes along will enjoy it tremendously. So the Emergency Ward 10 will be one of a number of things that we've recovered that we're showing for the first time in that instance for almost 60 years. And when you actually start handling the prints and you realize, crikey, this is the only one in the world, it's fascinating. Just out of interest, and don't tell anyone else this, it came back from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which is where it appears to have been broadcast in the late 1960s or early 1970s.
Right.
And am I right in thinking, John, that Emergency Ward 10 was really the archetype for, you know, those fans of Casualty, the BBC's long-running Casualty soap opera? Emergency Ward 10 was the forerunner and archetype of that sort of hospital drama.
Oh, absolutely.
And ER, of course, with an amazing cast in ER. But there was great cast in Emergency Ward 10. You know, actors and who went on to much, perhaps more serious work as their careers developed.
Well, this particular episode features actors like James Ellis, who went on to star in Zedcars and Softly Softly.
Zedcars.
David Collins, who was an acclaimed actor in many spheres, not least the theatre. And I won't spoil it for everyone, but I mean, yes, a tremendous, tremendous find. And like the Four Against Three and like the Each Wind That Blows, the ITV Playhouse, these are all things that we've recovered in recent months from collections. And the sad truth is, if we hadn't have been involved, that there's a very high probability that these films, the sole surviving copies, would literally have been thrown in the skip outside the properties.
Yeah.
That is the reality.
Mm. Could I also add a little bit about The Third Man?
Oh, yes.
Which was a wonderful television series based on the Orson Welles absolutely fantastic film, The Third Man. About the only thing they really had in common with it was the theme music, I think. Michael Rennie, who was tall and thin, was no Orson Welles, but he was Harry Lime. And the, I think, is it three or four third men, if I can say that, have come forward, have been found. But it then allows some sort of archive detective work. Because I can remember taking into the main BBC archive a whole several series of Third Men, and getting very confused by trying to identify their subtitles, because one of them had a place, you know, a few minutes in, that said "Sponsors Break." And I couldn't find any trace of a third man subtitled "Sponsors Break" until I realised, or somebody pointed out to me, that it was meant for the adverts. So you then wonder, where had this been shown originally? Obviously not on BBC television, although its first airing for the third man was on BBC television. And those ones that I accessioned into the archive are no longer there. There's two or three or something like that, but not all those series. And so these ones coming forward are the beginning of a detective story, because I'd found out that British Lion were the distributors of the third man, possibly all over the world, who knows. But the programmes were co-produced by the BBC and ABC in the States. And I think another film distributor took on the rights of British Lion, but they don't have the third men either. So there are a few on YouTube. You know, how did they get there? So there's a whole thesis here, maybe for one of Justin's students, to find out just what happened to all those third men. Where are they? Can we bring them all together? Each one will have a different story and a different line to where they've ended up, you know. So I throw that out there, Justin. I'm sure you can get a student to do that. Brilliant.
Thank you, Sue. That's a great idea.
I just have to add one more thing. When I did research for this episode, I also read something that I hadn't been thinking about, and that is that it's not just about finding missing films, but sometimes you find copies that are better than the ones already in the archive.
Yeah.
How important is that for you as an working in an archive, Sue?
That's really very important. Because sometimes, perhaps in the past, archivists had been a bit picky, if I could say that, or maybe their main brief was to keep content that could be repeated by the broadcaster, and therefore the technical quality of it was very important, and maybe they would have rejected a rather scratched copy or something like that. But now, you know, if we're thinking about our television history, the social importance of television reflecting our society, you know, Justin will be full of all the right words to describe this, but I think we all subscribe to how important television is as reflecting the societies that we're in. So where there is perhaps one rather poor quality copy in an archive, to find a better quality copy or a more complete version of the programme is so valuable, so important. It's great.
The other thing to add to what Sue rightly says there, I mentioned earlier that in some senses, the mission of Film is Fabulous to save film and to save knowledge about the handling of film is one of its key priorities and is one of the functions of the revolution of the digital age. But what shouldn't be forgotten either is that actually our techniques for restoring film now, despite the fact that it's technically an obsolete medium, are better than they've ever been. Mm. So we can do much more with what we find now than ever before, dependent upon, of course, its actual condition in which we find it. But I think that's a very important sort of positive to accentuate about the whole business of restoration and how and why it's often possible to find perhaps better copies than those that exist in the archive, or copies that can be made better through restoration than those which exist in the archive.
That's so true, Justin, because, you know, like when I was still working in the BBC archive, by and large, you need a Wetgate telecine to run a scratched or a messed up film. And those were really expensive. I mean, the costs of really good scanners and telecines was phenomenal. And the time, you had to do everything in real time. Now, digital technology can make a huge difference. I do think that you have to be careful that we don't change the film look too much, because that's an integral part of a film original, that it still looks like film, that you haven't cleaned it up so much that it looks too good.
I think we're very fortunate in that the people who have been doing the grading and the preparation of the items that we're screening, because we won't be projecting the films as they are the only and sole surviving copies. We'll be projecting DCP, digital cinema systems. But Paul Vanessis in particular, I mean, he's doing a fantastic job to ensure that what we're going to present is excellent, whilst at the same time retaining its character. Hmm.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
And John, you have been in this from the start. When you get a huge collection, just to catalog all the films is a huge task. I know from working from the Super 8 database how much work it is just to catalog something. How does that work happen? Who does the job? What happens when you move all those boxes into the storage?
Well, I play an integral part in that. I mean, the fact of the matter is we've just finished our pilot study. And during the course of the pilot study, we had people involved. Dr. Peter Lester was engaged. Really, while I handled the film, he did most of the data inputting. We've had to be very selective, Ivan. I mean, the truth of the matter is we've been contacted by people that have huge collections. Mm. And with the limited resources, that's space and personnel, it would take us 2 years just to catalogue that one collection.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's not something that we can take on. So during the course of the pilot study, what we've been trying to do is define exactly what's needed and try to manage things by having bite-sized pieces, maybe 500 films at a time. So 500 films, 16mm, 35mm, is taking us on average a month to catalogue. So, I mean, it is very labour-intensive. And, of course, when you're confronted with someone that has thousands, maybe even more than 10,000 films, you've got to think how that might impact other aspects of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is very, very difficult. And we have been trying to make decisions based on things like the vulnerability of the collection, whether someone literally needs to move the films out within a few days because the property is being emptied, how we can manage that. And of course, then what the plan would be for the films once we've got them, because we do have limited space, limited resources, limited personnel. And Film is Fabulous is not an archive. The whole idea is that we take them in, we identify what's in the collection. And when I say we take them in, the only things that we've not taken to date or we've refused to take were some nitrate film, because, of course, the implication that has in terms of insurance and all the characteristics of nitrate film. But fundamentally, we've taken VHS, we've taken reel-to-reel, and we pass those on to third parties who are very professional that help us manage that for the family. But coming back to the film, that's where we're really able to deliver expertise. And then we lodge the films with a third-party auction house, predominantly a specialist who can help us sell those films to other collectors so they have a new lease of life. And you're talking about collectors across the world. I mean, I've been collecting the data with Justin, and we've held a lot of auctions and sold thousands of films. And almost 50% of the people that purchase the items are based overseas, not in the UK. So a lot of people have an interest in the items that we've found. And that's tremendous because it means that those films are no longer vulnerable and they can be enjoyed by other collectors. And I'm sure the original owner would very much want that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we should add that in the case of those auctions, of course, the proceeds from the auctions are returned to the donor, that's the collector, or their family, or their estate, which is a very important part of the whole process. So the donor gets the financial reward from also knowing that their collection is in safe and good hands and will be cared for in the future.
But it's great to be able to get or start filling gaps in the broadcaster's archive, which when I first became the BBC's television archivist, or I couldn't be called an archivist selector, I think I was, it was such a shock to find out how many gaps there were. And then through working with FIAT, the International Federation of Television Archives, I learned through colleagues throughout the world in television archives, it was the same story the world over. So to be able to fill these gaps is just so fantastic. It's wonderful. As well as helping the collectors, as well as helping their families. It's just a great win-win-win, I think, with Film Fabulous. Well, we could just maybe mention we've been approached by organisations in the States now who are interested in what we're doing and want to set or are setting up a similar model. I think Dennis Dorans of EMEA in particular is developing a similar project to Film is Fabulous to find missing film, perfect. Particularly film. I think they're more focused on film than television, but they're very keen to follow what we've been doing.
Oh, that sounds fabulous. And as you probably will find lost American items and the Americans will find lost British items, that's just a perfect cooperation.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really nice cooperation there.
So after running this for 18 months, what is the most important thing you have learned so far? Perhaps that you didn't expect when you started.
Can I just say that we can do it? And I think that's very much down to John and his connections and Justin and this idea that we've had to build up trust. Because I, as I said earlier, I had organized a treasure hunt with looking for BBC stuff. I'd worked closely with Dick Finney at the BFI and not a lot of material had come back. Some things had, I can't deny those Dad's Armies, but the scale of what Film is Fabulous is finding to help fill these gaps and just help everybody all around is wonderful. And I didn't expect that.
I'll come in following Sue with my personal response to that question, which is I've been absolutely gobsmacked by the reaction of the families of collectors, often the families of deceased collectors, sadly, of how much it has meant to them to discover someone cares. Someone else cares about the often lifetimes work that a collector has put into amassing their collection. And that family member may not know what's in the collection, may not even understand the particular obsession of their sadly departed loved one. But it means so much to them that somebody else cares. And the well wishes and thanks that we've received, which is not what one does anything for, but those responses have, for me, the emotional responses, if you like, have been overwhelming. And it has reassured me that what we're doing is of immense value and enormous significance. It really has made a difference to people, as well as making a difference to film culture itself.
That sounds great. And we need to wrap up now. I just want to remind everybody of the Vintage Television Festival, which will be at the Phoenix Cinema and Arts Center in Leicester on Sunday, the 11th of May. So there you have a chance to watch the second premiere, to put it that way, for several of the items that has been recovered. And I'm sure you will be available for people that have questions for you sometime during the day. I will put the links to The Film is Fabulous and where to buy the tickets from the Phoenix in the show notes, so it will be easy to find. And for everybody else of us, make sure to have a plan for your collection. Talk to your relatives and family. What do you want to do with your collection when you finally are 6 feet under? And make sure the families know who to contact, whether it's Film is Fabulous or, like me living in Norway, perhaps have some other sort of contact. But make sure they know what to do, because it can be really overwhelming when you pass away. Thank you, Sue, Justin, and John, for joining me here today. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I've learned so much. Thank you for showing up here today, and I hope to see you again in the future. Perhaps you will show up at Blackpool once again, I hope.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Thank you, Ivan.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, big thank you to you. It's been great of you to help us this way, promoting the project.
And with that, we have reached the end of this episode. My name is Eivind Mork, and thanks for listening.